I'm Katie Lauer, and I'd like to share a piece I wrote about the great jazz drummer John Von Ohlen in 2015. Late on a November night, the trees are bending in the wind, their dried leaves swirling like eddies in the gutter. The moon is bright and full, but the streets of Over the Rhine are deserted, possibly because a cold front has moved in and sent people scurrying back into their warm caves. But just ahead at Japp's Bar, lights shine from the windows and music wafts through the doors every time someone enters or leaves the building. It is an oasis in a dark place, and it draws you like a magnet. The Blue Wisp Big Band came to play here when the Blue Wisp Jazz Club closed in June of 2015. Japp's, with its fancy cocktails and hipster crowd, isn't a place you'd associate with a big band. But drummer John Von Ohlen liked Japp's acoustics, and so all 16 pieces of the big band squeezed into the bar's small stage on Wednesday nights through the summer and into the fall. The reeds in the front line, the trombones next, and the trumpets behind them, with the two lead trumpet players occupying chairs on the left. The bass and the piano are like knights in a chess game, guarding the lead trumpet and the drums as if they were the king and queen. John Von Ohlen cooked up what became the Blue Wisp Big Band back in 1980 when he first heard a smoking trumpet player named Don Johnson. As John explained it, "Don and I started talking about a big band, because if you get a drummer and a lead trumpet player, and they can blow the roof off the place, they'll usually start a band, you know? They just can't help it." Great drummers are exciting to watch, and even in Japp's crowded quarters, the 76-year-old musician is mesmerizing, a barrel-chested man with long, rangy arms that command a powerful, fluid grace. The drum set arcs around him, the big bass drum square in front, the snare, tom-toms, and a thicket of cymbals crowding all sides. That equipment comes with the territory for a big band drummer. The magic is in what a drummer can do with it. In a post on the Drummer World web forum, Terry Brannon, a musician himself, recalled seeing John play years ago at a hotel gig. "My jaw was on the floor," he wrote. "He used to play this ride cymbal with a bite cut out of it like a quarter of it was missing. Dead as a doornail. In John's hands, though, it sounded incredible." Tonight he kicks off an Ellington tune, the upbeat swingy "Don't Get Around Much Anymore." Then he switches from Sticks to Brushes, a sound like the swish of Fred Astaire gliding over a gritty wood floor. What he chooses and how he makes the seamless switch are mysteries in his bag of percussion tricks, the bomb licks he has mastered and memorized and by now employs intuitively. The trombones add a jerky side riff, and the trumpets begin to kick in, bringing the reed instruments along with them. Steve Schmidt plays a couple of shimmering piano courses, bringing the band up to the Duke Ellington level of elegant intensity. With the tension building, it's time for John's solo, and every eye in the place is on him. He warms up a little on the snare and the ride cymbal, the one that sets that ring-ting-a-ting rhythm, throwing in a kick on the bass drum. Everyone is quiet in anticipation of the climax of the solo, and John doesn't disappoint. He is in total control. The beat leaps from one arm to the other like an electric current. The sticks are moving so fast they blur. He is breathing hard, his hair moving from side to side. His head is turned in a profile now, his mouth slack. He plays a rhythm on the snare and gets in a lick on the hi-hat, swinging so powerfully that the audience is shouting even as he brings the solo home, yelling as he counts the beats out for the band so they'll all come back in together. The trombones slide their way back in on the upbeat. The reeds join in, and Hank Mautner's trumpet climbs high and higher, a ladder of notes, until the audience is on its collective feet shouting and Hank and John are wailing to the end. It's going to be a good night. When the band takes a break, John sits down with me to catch his breath and continue the story of the formation of the Big Band, a jazz group that was formed when most of the culture was tuned into Alice Cooper and Steely Dan. "I had a hunch people wanted to hear real big band music," he says, "and they did. From the first," he says, "there were crowds showing up at the Blue Wisps' original home in O'Brienville, where they played on Wednesdays to enliven the club's traditionally dead night. We blew the roof off the place, but the acoustics were so good, it didn't hurt your ears." John runs his fingers through his graying hair, which is a little long, the Prince Valiant look his fellow band members call it, and takes a deep breath. He props his hand on his knee, stretching slightly after the workout of the evening's first set. He has an open face, broad and Midwestern. Originally from Indianapolis, he still has a bit of an Ohio twang that I can detect as he explains that his first major job was with Billy Maxted and his Manhattan Jazz Band. "It was a great band," he says. "It felt like family. But Woody Herman and his thundering herd came calling. Even in 1966, when a young drummer's fancy could follow many more seemingly hip directions, John would have had to be insane to turn down that chair. True, the era of big band jazz was fast being eclipsed by rock and roll, but Herman had been at it since the 1930s and had nurtured the likes of Stan Getz, Zoot Sims, and Al Cohn. He played with Woody Herman for one not very satisfying year. John remembers not being happy with his performance. "I played better in high school than I did with Woody," he says openly. He needed to get himself grounded again, and he did it by going on a round-the-world tour with a yoga and meditation master named Master Subramunia. The Beatles were doing it, after all, and John found some peace in India that he desperately needed. "When I stopped trying to sound like Buddy Rich or Elvin Jones, I'd begun to work on my natural style, my own way," he says. "Finding yourself is a lifelong study, but everybody's got to do it." The first band John heard live as a teenager was Stan Kenton, and Stan Kenton became his idol. He'd gotten to know Kenton a bit while he was with Woody Herman, and in 1970, he got the call to join the fabled band leader. "When I went with him, it was like coming home," he recalls. "Where Woody had been a real hard charger, Stan was easy. I was on an album called Downtown Blues, and after that I made something of an international reputation for myself as the featured soloist with the Kenton Band." He played with Kenton for 2 years, but John found the road exhausting. In 1972, he left the grind and returned to India for what he calls, quote, "a period of study," unquote. "Stan had a fit," he recalls. "He wanted me to stay or to settle in L.A. and be a big band drummer out there if I couldn't take the road anymore, but I didn't see it that way. Man, there are good musicians everywhere. Music is like universal." John returned to the Midwest, played with some heavy-duty cats in Indianapolis, and eventually rented a cabin, which he still keeps as a getaway in Sunman, Indiana. He rejoined Stan Kenton briefly when Kenton's drummer hurt his ankle. "I could never pay him back for what he taught me about music," he says. But by that time, John had stubbornly, some would say, cast his lot in our neck of the woods. "There I was in my cabin in Sunman," he says, "and I didn't know anybody. Cal Collins had heard I was in Indiana, and he called me to play a job at the Buccaneer out on Reading Road in Cincinnati. Around that same time, he met trumpeter Don Johnson while filling in on the Bob Braun Show, forming a musical partnership that lasted until Johnson left town in the 1990s. The band they started prompted John to make Cincinnati his home, and it would also prove that John's theory was true. Man, there's good musicians everywhere. Huge talents passed through the Blue Wisp Jazz Club in its heyday. In addition to Cal Collins, John played with Joe Pass, Ellington alumni such as Bill Berry, Concord recording artists Scott Hamilton and Warren Vache, and the cosmic jazz man, Sun Ra. He joined Rosemary Clooney on tour for a while and recorded with singer Maxine Sullivan in New York. When it came to romance, it was only natural that John ended up with the best girl singer in town, Mary Ellen Tanner. Pretty petite Mary Ellen, with her rich voice and impeccable technique, gave John something few others offered. When his life was a pressure cooker of jobs and obligations, Mary Ellen made him laugh. "I love to come in at night and hear her quacking on the phone with one of her girlfriends," he says. "She'd wave at me and smile and go right on quacking. I didn't care. I just loved the sound of her voice." John pauses for a moment. She was a magic person. She'd make the checkout girl at Kroger's feel better just by going in and buying a loaf of bread. Mary Ellen died in the spring of 2014. When I called him months later, he still had her silky voice on the answering machine. He says that he doesn't know how to change it. I doubt that. I remember seeing John sitting drawn and pale white in the funeral home at her wake. It was unprecedented to see him so powerless. His power never really left him, though, and now as he begins to come back to himself, he reminds me of an overworked, underpaid executive. What he lacks in material goods, he makes up for in adoration. His students, he is an adjunct instructor at CCM, are in awe of him. To the consternation of his academic colleagues, he used to urge his students to quit school and learn their chops on the job. "Go to work," he would say. "That's the way you learn. Just keep playing," he'd insist, "and you'll come up with the bomb licks, those unique drum riffs that nobody else can play. Mastering your own style," he concludes, "is the only authentic way to live." Back at Japs, it's time to get the animals back in the pit, as Margene Wisby, the owner of the old Blue Wisp, used to say. John groans a little, then picks himself up and shakes it off. "Art," he says, "is sweat and dreams." He salutes me with the drumstick he has picked up and goes back on stage for the last set. Steve Schmidt, the Blue Wisp's longtime pianist, has played with John for more than 30 years. "What I love about John is his delight in the music," he says. "He is childlike, but he is sophisticated, too. When the band is playing, John is always fully present in the music. There is no separation in him. He is whole." That quality comes across best when you see him live with the Blue Wisp Big Band, his musical and some would say spiritual home. If you can't make it out to see him at the DeFelice Cafe playing with a trio, you can content yourself with the Big Band's recordings, Butterfly, Rolling with Von Ohlen, and Live at Carmelo's. They're hard to find, but worth the effort. If you can score one, put it on your turntable, mix yourself a Manhattan, and get ready to swing. John, if you're listening out there, we love you. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Katie Lauer.